Hey, everybody. Welcome back to I Just Had a Terrible Thought, the only show on the internet. My name is Kyle, and I am all alone today. Orion couldn't make it. He was on his way, and it's the end of the world. The world's ending all around us. All of a sudden, the earth just kind of split open and swallowed up his car. And all I could hear as he fell into the lava was, ow, ow, Orion, ow. But yeah, so the world is ending all around us. Orion couldn't make it. I just fucking woke up. And let me tell you, if you're going to take a nap and you're like, you know what, I got something to do, but there's so much time between now and then that I don't need to set an alarm. There's no way I'm going to sleep that late. I mean, that's ridiculous. Don't listen to yourself, because you really should just set that fucking alarm. Because I knew I was going to do the show later, but I was like, I don't have to do it at any particular time. And God, there are so many hours between now and then. It's not like I'm going to get a full night's sleep here. I'll just take a nap. I'll wake up. It'll be fine. Well, I just woke up and it's after midnight already. It's almost 2 a.m. right now. So I very nearly didn't end up doing this. Like, because I woke up, regardless of how much sleep I get, when I wake up, I am exhausted. I don't know why that is. I don't know, you know, do I have sleep apnea and I'm not actually getting real sleep? I don't know. But I never wake up rested. So when I woke up just now at like 1:30 in the morning or whatever, and I'm thinking, oh, I got to do this podcast, but it's so late, I've already missed podcast time, which was a stupid rationalization, because there is no podcast time if it's just me. But anyway, I've already missed podcast time. I'm exhausted. You know what? They already know Orion's not coming. I could probably just call this one off. Why not? You know, it's been forever since we've missed an episode. I think the only episode we ever actually skipped was when we went to Vegas in our first year, which is kind of interesting, actually. That's pretty consistent, more consistent than any other podcast I listen to, I think. But anyway, so here I am, just woke up. Real cloudy in the head. You might hear a bunch of fan noise in the background. Maybe you don't hear it. Hopefully you don't hear it. But I have a box fan on to the highest setting right now, and I have my window open. And the reason for that is because yesterday, my graphics card in my computer started rattling. Actually, at first, I didn't know it was my graphics card. I just knew I was watching a video, and I had my headphones on, and the video ended. And all of a sudden, you know, I'm sitting there in silence and I just hear this horrible, horrible rattling sound. And at first I thought it was coming from outside, and it wasn't. I took my headphones off and kind of moved around the room trying to find the source of this noise. And I realized it's coming from my computer. So I opened it up and then I pinpointed it as coming from my graphics card. The fan is broken. There's a fan built right into my graphics card. And excuse me, I don't know how it happened, but somehow it's like a plastic ring, and then the fan blades come off of that, and the ring itself cracked. So like half of the fan blades were just sort of sagging and like flopping up and down and hitting on everything, hitting on the graphics card and the little case for the fan itself. And so I suppose it was still technically kind of working as a fan, but I was kind of playing with it before I realized exactly what had happened. At first, I thought it was just loose or something, and I think I made it worse, and the rattling got worse, and then the fan just stopped moving altogether because it kept catching on things. So right now, my graphics card is just sitting there with no fan. And a little bit earlier today, I was watching a YouTube video, and all of a sudden, the graphics were just going crazy. Everything was turning into rainbows, and I had it full screen, and it just decided not to be full screen anymore, which I think was my graphics card acting up. And so now, my solution, my temporary solution to the problem, is to have my computer case opened up with a box fan sitting right in front of it on the highest setting, and my window open. So I'm just sitting here freezing my balls off, and I've got a fan on. Awesome. And I don't know what I'm going to do about this, because I'm not that well-versed when it comes to computer hardware. I have opened up computers before and installed various cards, networking cards and graphics cards and things before. But when I got this graphic card installed, it was my old roommate Mike that put it in. And I assumed it was just as easy as anything else. You know, usually you just have to unscrew something and then shove something in a slot. But I was looking in there trying to, because I was thinking maybe I should just take the graphics card out, because the only thing I ever really use it for anymore is Minecraft, which I'll talk about a little bit more in a minute. But But if that's the only thing I'm using it for, then I could just take it out and just use the onboard graphics card. But, or not graphics card, I guess. You know what I mean. Onboard graphics chips or whatever. But I'm looking at it and I can't figure out how to get it out of there. Because I see where it's plugged into the slot where I could just pull it out. And I can kind of see how it's hooked up to the back, you know, where the little plugs and things stick out. But I only see, it doesn't appear to be screwed in there. But it's also definitely stuck there. I don't see any way to remove it from that spot. So I can't figure out how to remove my graphics card. So right now, I don't know what I'm going to do. But hopefully my computer doesn't melt, because then you might miss next week's episode. Maybe we finally will miss an episode. But enough of that. It's a little difficult doing these alone episodes. It should be noted that I'm not mad at Orion this time at all. He actually let me know right after the last episode that he wasn't going to make it tonight. And because my memory is shit, I can't remember exactly why. I think he was going to a birthday party, but it was for somebody that I don't know, so I wasn't going to go. So here I am. I actually have notes here to keep me on track, and it's not really working. I guess one thing I wanted to mention, I've been listening to some more Whiskey Thursday and some of that Method to Madness podcast. I do have to say, Whiskey Thursday is growing on me. I enjoyed this latest episode. There were a few parts where I was just like, brr, but for the most part, I enjoyed this latest episode. It actually made me laugh and stuff. So I really do think it's growing on me. And I really do think that if you are at all like me and you just need podcasts to listen to, you know, maybe you listen to them on a long commute, or you listen to them at work or whatever, or you're just a really fucking bored ass human being, then I would give them a shot. I think it's worth listening to. And Method to Madness, which was the other one, the one that I said I thought was more anime heavy, the guy who does that, Sean Ryan, posted on our Facebook page that he thinks their best stuff is this, I guess it's a series, but I think there's only one actual episode of it so far, called Gist of the North Star, where they review Fist of the North Star, which is an anime. And he said that their show was really, it was fairly anime heavy, but it was also really geared at people who are not into anime, which I think is only kind of true. But I don't think that's his fault. I think it'd be very difficult to do a show very anime heavy that is geared towards people who don't watch anime, because I listened to the Gist of the North Star and it wasn't bad. But the thing is, I've never seen Fist of the North Star. I'm relatively familiar with it, just kind of peripherally. I've heard a lot of things about it. But even at that, really, a lot of it kind of flew over my head, just because, I mean, they did a good job of explaining what they were talking about and what happened in the show. I think it would serve well if you were trying to decide if you should watch Fist of the North Star or not. I think it'd be good for that. But if all you're interested in doing is just listening to this podcast and it's about this show that you've never seen, it's probably not as entertaining as it would be if you had seen it. But it still wasn't bad. It wasn't like, it didn't sound like a lot of inside jokes exactly. They did, like I said, they kind of explained what they were talking about. So I still think that's a decent show, but I think it's probably definitely a better show if you're into anime, if you know what these guys are talking about, or at least you're into anime and you are likely to go and check out something they talk about that you haven't already seen. It kind of reminds me of, there's a podcast called Fast Karate for the Gentleman, which I used to listen to. I still do listen to it on occasionally when I can't find other stuff. But it's a good show, but they also talk a lot about anime, and they talk a lot about video games, and video games, great, but they talk a lot about video games I don't give a fuck about. So it was more what they decide to talk about and less the guys doing the show and the quality of the show that made me stop listening as often. But it's a good show. But then thinking about that made me think of, I've noticed that a lot of podcasts that are kind of anime oriented. Sorry, my voice is just going. I guess I'm just going to have to deal with it. a lot of podcasts that seem to be anime oriented, for some reason, their podcast name and their website name are not the same. And maybe this is just, I really have a very small sample here to deal with. So maybe this is just nothing, just coincidence. But like Whiskey Thursday, they do talk about anime, but they're not that anime heavy, really, because it's, in general, it's more like our show. They just talk about whatever. And sometimes that includes anime. And hell, even on our podcast, occasionally that has included anime. but they also have other shows that I don't know much about. But anyway, so Whiskey Thursday is on a website called fightbait.com. This Method to Madness podcast is on a website called thegrayghost.net. Fast Karate for the Gentleman, that show that I was just talking about, is on daveandjoel.com. So all these podcasts, and I think there were more, and I just can't think of them right now. All these podcasts have one name, and their website has another, which, you know, whatever, their fans will find it. But I think that's kind of ill-advised. I imagine WhiskeyThursday.com is probably available, and I would I would think that it wouldn't be, and that's just as an example. I would say this to all of them, except maybe Method to Madness. I wouldn't be surprised if that's taken. But but yeah, I would imagine it would be beneficial to own the domain name that corresponds to your podcast. Maybe they do and they just don't use it. I haven't exactly tried. What else? Oh, another thing that I was thinking about when I was listening to Whiskey Thursday today is they play a lot of promos for other shows and stuff when they take little breaks and things, which is cool. I mean, I would do that if I gave a shit about other shows. But I heard a promo today for a show called Geek Nights. Oh, that's another one. Okay, Geek Nights is also, it's another podcast, and it's also fairly anime heavy. They actually split their show up into different categories. Like I think they do like 4 shows a week. And each show is on a different day, and each day has a designation. Like this day we do the anime show. This day we do the video game show. This day we do the random tech show. Or I forget. It's been a while since I've listened to it. But this Geek Nights show is called Geek Nights, and it's on a website called FrontRowCrew.com. So it's just another example. But anyway, so I heard this promo, and it reminded me of this show, which I had basically forgotten existed. I'd blocked it out of my mind like I'd been molested as a child or something. I hate this show, Geek Nights. I listened to it for a while back when I was first getting into podcasting and I was having a hard time coming up with enough podcasts to fill my day. But these two guys, I forget their names off the top of my head, but they're just the most insufferable asshole nerds I have ever heard. Like their sound quality is pretty good, and their voices in terms of like the quality of their voices, if that makes any sense, aren't so bad. But there's a tone to them that makes them sound like they are literally sneering at you throughout the entire show. Like they're just so fucking condescending. And it's one thing, like on this show, I talk a fair amount about stupid people doing stupid things and I laugh at stupid people. But I get the impression that these guys, and you know, maybe this is me, but I don't get this impression with any other shows. I get the impression that these guys on Geek Nights are actually sneering at the listener, that they think the listener is an idiot and that they're so fucking smart and that you are so lucky to be listening to their show where you can hear these smart people tell you smart things, which is just ridiculous. I mean, they just really are a couple of assholes. But anyway, I mean, you know, I guess it's related kind of topically to what the Whiskey Thursday guys sometimes talk about. And I think John Paul also just likes to, from Whiskey Thursday, I think he just likes to play promos for other shows and stuff. I think maybe this is just me making stuff up. Maybe it makes him feel like more of a show, you know, like to play commercials during your break or whatever, instead of just like I do. I have like 4 promos for our own show that I kind of alternate between. I should make more of those, by the way. What else was I thinking about today? My birthday was this past Monday, and I took Monday and Tuesday off from work. Not because I had anything really to do. I didn't do anything for my birthday. I didn't go out anywhere. I didn't have any kind of get together or anything like that. I pretty much just stayed to myself. I had thought that, you know, that Minecraft thing I was doing, I thought, you know, I'll get another episode of that done. You know, I had the weekend and then I had 2 extra days. I'll get another episode of that done. So that was pretty much the only goal I had for that little 4-day weekend. And I did not get that done. I did record a little bit more, but I have kind of come to the conclusion that I find me running around playing a video game playing Minecraft specifically and just talking about what I'm doing, I find that dull. And, you know, that's not to say that anybody else who would end up watching it would find it dull. It's quite possible that I could just wander around in Minecraft, just playing the game like normal and talking about what I'm doing, and other people would like it. I don't know. I mean, that's very possible. But if I find it dull, I find it very difficult to do, you know, very difficult to keep going. It's very easy for me to get discouraged when doing things like that. And if I'm not enjoying it, then I'm not going to want to put it out. And it makes me want to just stop. I keep starting, I'll record 15 minutes and then be like, oh, for fuck's sake, I can't put this on people. And then I'll stop and try to think of what to do instead. And then I'll record another 15 minutes and I'll just be like, oh, this is just awful. Why am I doing this? So I've kind of come to the conclusion that if I'm going to keep doing that, it's going to be very sporadic, just whenever I feel like I actually have something to show you. Because I had heard a couple of people had said, you know, the part of the video I did put up, the best part was the part where I was showing off all the stuff that I did in Minecraft already and explaining what I did and why it was there and all that stuff. And I kind of agree. I think that was the strongest part of the episode. That was the very beginning of the thing. So I think if I'm going to keep doing Minecraft videos at all, that's kind of what it's going to be. I'll play for a while. And then when I have something that I think would be interesting to show off, I'll show you what I did. I'll explain it. And that's what it'll be. And that's if I keep doing it at all. Because, you know me at this point, if you've been listening long enough, it's not uncommon for me to get an idea and talk it up like I'm going to do it. And then I don't ever actually do it. You know, like the last rap we did, Orion and I have done two raps together now. And the first one was a long time ago. And to be honest, when I listen to it now, like I like parts of it, but it's kind of cringeworthy. And the second one, and everybody seemed to like that first one, by the way. So again, maybe it's just me, but the second one, we never actually finished because I got very discouraged. I hated the way it was coming out. And then I played what we did of that one for other people and they liked it. But I just can't make myself like it. So I have a hard time making myself finish things if I don't feel like they're going the right way. But yeah, so my birthday was Monday, and I did get a couple of donations, birthday donations. I'm not going to go into specifics because I was sort of told not to by one person. The other person didn't really say, but I did get a couple of birthday donations, and you know who you were, and that was awesome. You're the best ever. I love you forever and ever and ever and ever. We should get married. All of us should get married. We might have to move for that, unless you don't mind it not being a legal marriage, in which case we can just have a ceremony. That's fine with me. But the one thing I did end up doing those 2 days that I took off from work instead of doing my Minecraft video, and this is, again, very, very normal for me. It's very typical of how I operate. I'll have one thing in mind that I really want to do, but then my brain gets locked onto this other thing. And so I ended up creating a creeper rap. The creepers from Minecraft, I made a rap about them, which I think I will insert right here.
It's your very first night and you're gathering up some planks, but little did you know that I'm coming up in the ranks. You built your first house, now you're saying your fucking thanks, that you saved for the night and not going out with a bang. Now I'm moving up slow in the back of your new dwelling. I'm so excited, I can feel my body swelling in murderous suicidal anticipation. I know I can't do it without your participation, so go ahead, make a bed and reset your spawn. Maybe in the morning you'll go and fix up your lawn, plant some flowers or a tree, but you've gotten it all wrong. Like a zombie, you thought that I would burn up after dawn. I got nothing left to live for but dying. I ain't trying to mess around and make some noise like a lion. I'm real quiet, sneaking up on you like Freddy or Jason. Light up all my gunpowder, blow it up in your face. And now I'm dead and I'm gone, left a hole in the ground. You respawn, meet my dad, his perpetual frown. Meet my brothers and my sisters and my uncles and cousins. Like a fucking creeper army, they show up by the dozen. Now you're scared, double tapping, double you, now you're running. We're just funning, you know they don't call us creepers for nothing.
So there's my creeper rap. I don't know why I did that. You know, like, what is the end goal for that? What is my point there? What do I intend to do with that? I don't know. Nothing really. I posted it to the Facebook. So if you're a crazy person who actually thought that that was something you would want to listen to again, you can find it there and download it. Yeah. So I made a creeper rap. I like the way it came out, but so I felt kind of good about it because I felt like I kind of accomplished something. But like I said, I don't know what the fuck is the point of that. What am I going to do with that? I don't know. So basically, I had a really uneventful birthday. But it's still my birthday month. So hey, if you're like, oh man, I missed your birthday, don't worry about it. There's still time to send me all of the contents of your bank account. man, I am forgetting what I wanted to talk about. So I think for now, I'll just get into the Facebook and Twitter. There were no voicemails this week, which is, you know, whatever. Let's see. Let's get into the Twitter first, I guess. On the Twitter. Oh, I'm Kilo. Last week, we read some tweets from him, or a tweet from him about, hey, you know, I feel like I have enough t-shirts already, which is why I donated. And I was saying that I didn't really understand what it was he was trying to communicate there. I mean, you know, he donated. Awesome. And he doesn't feel like he needs any more t-shirts, so he wouldn't buy a t-shirt from us if we put them out there. Which is fine. I just didn't really get what the goal of that statement was. And then Orion was saying stuff like, oh, that's such a dick move. And I didn't really agree that it was a dick move. I really was just sort of confused by it. I didn't know exactly what he was trying to say. And then he came back on the Twitter and he said, I meant I donated as in, hey, other people, if you want to help the show, donate. So, I mean, that's fair. And then he says, nothing against t-shirts. I tweeted about it so you guys wouldn't be disappointed when I didn't buy one. I sure do think highly, I think that's about him thinking highly of himself, like I would just be like, what the fuck? Why hasn't I'm Kilo bought a t-shirt? Oh my God, I'm going to kill myself. But yeah, so he was, I guess what he was trying to say was, I probably won't be buying a t-shirt, but I still appreciate the show and I still want to support it, which is why I donated. And hey, other people, if you want to help the show, then donate. but yeah, anyway, yeah, you can help the show in either way. Again, the t-shirts still aren't out there for you to buy, so it's completely hypothetical at this point anyway. But I would appreciate it either way, almost equally, depending on how much you donate, I guess. If you donated like $500, then obviously I'm going to appreciate that a lot more than you buying a t-shirt. But in a general sense, I would appreciate the two equally. And then I got a Twitter post from somebody who I think was spamming me because I clicked the link and I don't even know. They sent a link and I don't even know what it is because when I clicked on it, Google Chrome was like, fuck that shit. That shit is going to eat your computer alive. Do not even go. We're not even going to let you go to that website. I'm not even going to tell you what this is because it's evil. So I don't even know what that was, but I think it was spam. Then Sean Ryan from the greyghost.net from Method to Madness podcast. He says, Halloween's coming. Most inappropriate costumes or treats you can imagine, or treats you wish you'd received more often. We had a whole episode about the treats. I think it was like our first Halloween episode. We went on and on at length about Halloween candy and the horrible shit people give out on Halloween and the good shit that people give out on Halloween. I had always wished when I was a kid that I had found these magical, mythical houses that were giving out king-size candy bars because every year I would hear about this from other kids. Like the day after Halloween or the first school day after Halloween, some kid would be talking about how there was this house in his neighborhood that was just giving out king-size Kit Kats and king-size Hershey bars and king-size Butterfingers. All these, like they went to a convenience store and just cleared out the shelves, you know? And I never found these houses. To be fair, my parents, when I was really little, and I loved this, they would take us to this apartment complex near where my grandparents lived. But it was like, I guess maybe it was more like townhouses than apartments because everybody had a door to the outside. You know, that it wasn't like there wasn't a shared stairwell or anything. And we would go through this complex and hit so many places that I would come home with my own pillowcase, because that's what we used, full of candy. Just full, almost, you know, almost to the top. So I would have so much candy, but so much of that candy was just absolute garbage. The worst offender, in my opinion, and we did talk about this before, were the Mary Janes. And I don't know if you know what those are. Mary Janes, they're sort of kind of like Bit of Honey. They're about the same size and shape, and they're just this horrible, hard, I don't even know what flavor that's supposed to be. Is it like a caramel, butter, honey, scotch. I don't know what the fuck that is, but they're this just this horrible brown, like, just resin secreted from the gums of old people and wrapped up in this horrible, like, grease-stained red and yellow wrapper with a little picture of a little girl that kind of reminds me of the Morton Salt girl on it. But it's just horrible, horrible candy. I don't even know where you get it. I don't think they make it anymore. I think you have to have like a connection with the devil to obtain these. But old people do it all the time. Maybe sometime way back in the past, like the government used to issue these. These are government issue candies. I could kind of see that. And like all these old people just have all this government issue candy from way back in the Depression or something. With it's like a candy stimulus program, and they just have all these stockpiled somewhere, and they're just trying to get rid of them. I don't know. And then there's the, what is it, double bubble, that horrible bubble gum. I didn't want gum for Halloween anyway. I mean, gum isn't candy, old people. I'm sorry. I know it's sweet. You put it in your mouth, and they look similar. They come in similar wrappers, but gum is not candy. But on top of that, oh man, my throat. Double bubble is the worst gum. Like, if you're going to get gum, this is the worst possible gum to get. It's hard as a fucking rock. It's all dried out and nasty. Again, like it's been around for 30 years. It's just terrible gum. And that, like, it's that standard bubblegum flavor, but it's like a harsh version of it. Like it's almost a medicinal bubblegum flavor. I don't know if I'm the only one who feels this way, but there's that double bubble stuff. Something about the formulation of it or whatever makes it almost hurt to chew it. Not because it's so hard, but like the chemical composition of whatever it is that makes up that flavor kind of stings. Like you're really not supposed to put this in your mouth, but I don't know, whatever. Bit of honey is a similar thing. Like who the fuck wants a bit of honey? Like what, who's eating this? But that's not as bad. Then we talked about these, candies I used to get all the time that were basically candy cigarettes. You know, they were those sticks of white sugar, but they weren't packaged as candy cigarettes. They'd come in these little tiny thin rectangular boxes with pictures of like Frankenstein or a skeleton or a mummy on them. And they didn't have names as far as I could tell. I still can't figure out what these things are actually called, but, we'd get those, which, you know, who wants those? If it's not a candy cigarette, like the whole point of candy cigarettes, and for better or for worse, however you feel about it, the whole point of a candy cigarette is to pretend you have a cigarette. I mean, otherwise, they're just kind of a mediocre candy. They're okay, but it's really just, you're just eating sugar. I never encountered a house giving out candy cigarettes. I think Orion talked about this guy that would do that when he was a kid, which I think is kind of funny, actually. I don't think there can't be anything illegal about that, can there? I could see parents confiscating it when they get the Halloween candy home, but I can't imagine the person could actually get in trouble for giving out candy cigarettes on Halloween. So maybe I should try doing that sometime. I don't know where you can buy candy cigarettes in bulk, though. treats I wish I'd received more really was just the king size candy bars. I wish I'd gotten those more, and I wish I had gotten less, you know, like popcorn balls and apples and cookies and pocket change. All the popcorn balls, apples and cookies and things like that were just things I couldn't eat, even if I wanted to, which I really didn't, because they were always coming from scary old people. And I was just, I have this kind of fear when I get home-baked things from old people that pieces of them have somehow fallen off into the batter or whatever it is they're making. I just get that feeling like they've got leprosy and like just little chunks of them are falling off, like an earlobe or a nostril just falls off into the mix. So I wouldn't really want to eat that stuff anyway. Plus I have this feeling that old people just kind of secrete this sort of old people gravy. Like they're just kind of coated and it's a thin layer and you don't really see it, but it just secretes and drips off of them and stuff and could get into whatever. And that explains why their houses smell so bad, because they're just covered. Like, you know, the aliens in the movie Aliens, how they would kind of secrete stuff and then build these those crazy ribbed, sticky structures that they would like seal people in with and cocoon stuff up with and stuff. I kind of imagine old people doing the same thing. Like I could imagine walking into the house of an old person and finding like a rocking chair. And then upon closer inspection, you realize it's just made entirely out of old people resin. But what was I saying? Oh, yeah. And then the pocket change. I used to get pocket change from old people, or I'd get toothbrushes. Look, I get it. I get it. You're trying to be a positive influence, but that's not what Halloween is about. We dress up as fucking demons and roam the neighborhood looking for candy. It's not an opportunity for you to teach me about brushing my teeth. And the pocket change thing just seems like you're lazy. Like you didn't know it was Halloween. Like, ah, shit. Here's a matchbook and a paperclip and some pocket change. But so that's how I feel about Halloween treats. Inappropriate costumes or treats. I think it's so easy to come up with something inappropriate. And I think it also is inappropriate is such a subjective thing. Like I heard somebody a little while ago talking about going as the ghost of Steve Jobs for Halloween, which I didn't think was particularly creative or funny, but I thought it was more creative and funny than it was offensive and inappropriate. But then, like in that same, well, I forget, maybe I saw it on Reddit or something, but in that same place that I saw it, there were people complaining about how that was disrespectful. You know, it was too soon, and they weren't joking. It was too soon, which is just so crazy to me. I wouldn't consider that inappropriate, but there are so many things that are inappropriate. I mean, they actually sell Halloween costumes where you just dress as a giant dick. So, I mean, I think that takes care of it right there. I guess any kind of sexy Halloween costume for like a child would be kind of inappropriate. I've considered dressing up as the Twin Towers, like getting somebody to go with me and dressing up as the Twin Towers, and then maybe getting somebody else to dress up as a plane. But it seems so passé to me or something. Is that the right word? I don't know. It just seems, it's not even funny anymore, really. Inappropriate treats, again, it's so easy. Condoms would be an inappropriate treat to hand out to kids. And the best thing about that to me is that it's both horribly inappropriate and kind of the same as giving out toothbrushes. I mean, no little kid wants condoms in their treat bag. And it's sort of like, you know, how, you can go to free clinics or whatever, or you go to a bar and maybe they have free condoms lying around because they're trying to be, socially responsible, you know, and like, take care of everybody. Like, we know you're going to get wasted here at the bar and probably hook up with somebody and go home and bang them. Here, take these free condoms because we want you to be safe. It's sort of the same idea, but it's completely inappropriate because you're giving them to kids. Like, I could see it. I could see the motivation being the same, but it's somehow still completely inappropriate. I mean, so it's so easy to come up with something inappropriate to give kids as treats on Halloween or to wear on Halloween. I mean, you could answer your door completely naked and then, pretend to be Adam, you know, of Adam and Eve and be like, haha, you know, it's not inappropriate. It's a biblical costume. And then you could hand out religious tracts to the kids. That's just inappropriate on all levels. Which is another thing that I guess people used to do. That was one I never got, but I could totally see it handing out, religious pamphlets and things to kids on Halloween. That's one of the things I was going to talk about last week, and I totally forgot about it this week, so I don't have the stuff pulled up. But I guess Jesus Ween is this new thing that these Christians are talking about. Jesus Ween, which is basically on Halloween. It's just Halloween, but they renamed it, and they want to give out like Bibles and religious information and stuff instead of candy, which is just awful. Because even the religious kids don't want that shit. Like the religious kids don't want it and they don't need it. They're already religious kids. And the non-religious kids really don't want it. Like you're giving me a Bible on candy day? Like how fucking, what an asshole. I guess that's all I got to say about Halloween candy and Halloween costumes really right now. Maybe we'll talk about that more next week when Orion's back. And then my buddy Devin says on the Twitter, I would like to hear your top five NES/Super NES games. I know you've mentioned some before, but make it definitive. Share why. That's really difficult. And I took that nap and I saw this tweet after I took that nap. And I haven't really had time to sit down and come up with these. I guess it'd be two lists. Unless I combine NES and Super NES games and pick the top five out of those, it's pretty difficult to do. I mean, even if I pick five games I really, really like as like the top five, to actually then rank those games is really difficult. But I could kind of sort of try. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I am going to take a break here. And then I will try to come up with these two lists really quick during the break, and then I'll come back and I'll give you my lists. Okay? All right. See you then.
Mom, do I like mushrooms? Oh. Billy!
Faggots.
Ken?
Oops.
I'm the only one who's got it
today. Billy! Look, Katie, a big ape! Hey, my faggot!
Stop. Who's a big ape?
Billy, you've got 5 seconds!
Mom, this one looks like Uncle Roy.
Get on with your meal.
Mr. Brain's Faggots. A great meal all round.
And I am now back. I've got my two lists here, my list of NES games, top five and top five SNES games. Little aside really quick. I get annoyed, and I have no real right to get annoyed at this. I don't know why it bothers me, but it really bothers me when people pronounce those acronyms, when people say NES and especially SNES. I don't know why that bothers me so much, but it really does. I mean, it makes sense. They have vowels in them. They're completely pronounceable. But I don't know, especially SNES, like something about SNES, like adding that S to the front just drives me crazy. Anyway, so I guess I'll start with the NES games because I'll go in chronological order in that sense. my number five NES game, and you know, Devin said to make these definitive. I really can't make them definitive. Like if you asked me this question on a different day and I tried to make these two lists, they'd probably be different. But as best as I could do it, My top five list of NES games, starting with number five, would be Gunsmoke. Now, Gunsmoke is a very overlooked game, I think. I bet a lot of people just have not played it. And I could see why. You look at the cover of it. I owned this game on a cartridge as a kid. And it's just this oil painting of a cowboy. And it's called Gunsmoke. It's like named, I don't know if it's actually supposed to be related, but it's like named after a really, really old Western TV show. It just seems kind of boring, but what it actually is a top-down shooter. It just so happens that instead of a little spaceship flying through space, you're controlling a little cowboy and you're shooting Native Americans and bandits and stuff and wandering through Old West towns. And the control scheme is kind of cool because it used the two, the NES controller had the D-pad, start, select, and then the two buttons, A and B. And, you can control where you're shooting with the A and B buttons. If you hit, I believe A, he shoots right, kind of at an angle to the right. If you hit B, he shoots kind of at an angle to the left. And if you hit them both, he shoots straight up. And there's some kind of cool power-ups. Like you can, every once in a while, as you're wandering through these towns. Oh, well, here, the way the levels work is you're wandering through a town or a valley or whatever. And it keeps scrolling and repeating the level until you get a wanted poster. And the wanted poster represents the boss of that particular level. And when you finally get that, the level stops repeating itself and allows you to get to the end. And then the boss shows up. And there are two ways to get the wanted poster. You can either find it somewhere in the level, or there are these two little people that you will occasionally encounter in the level. One of them will sell you like power-ups. They'll sell you guns and stuff, which is cool. You can get like a machine gun or a shotgun, which is kind of like a spread gun. You can get smart bombs, which is really funny for the Wild West. But and then the other person will sell you items. They'll sell you the wanted poster. They'll sell you a horse, I think you can buy from them. The horse is kind of cool. The horse, I think it might make your character faster, but what it definitely does is allows you to take more damage because the horse will take damage first. And then when the horse dies, you lose the horse and then you can die. Then you can get hurt again. But so, I mean, that's basically Gunsmoke. It's, I forget how many levels it is, but you go through this level, shooting guys and picking up stuff. You get points for picking up different items. And then the points are what you spend as money in those two little shops. I just really like it. I think it's a lot of fun. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about it. I don't exactly do a lot of video game reviews. I guess my number four would be River City Ransom. And I think some people would probably be surprised so far down the list because it's a really, really good game. It's a side-scrolling beat-em-up game like a Double Dragon or kind of sort of like a Final Fight game. But it also has some RPG elements. There are shops that you can go into to buy various items. And there's, for an NES game, there's a surprising amount of items, especially considering it really isn't an RPG. There are all kinds of food items you can get and power-ups that you can get, which come in the form of books you can read to learn new techniques and stuff. I don't know. It's just a really cool game. I like the art style. I like the way when you kill somebody, they drop coins that bounce and they make this nice little dinging sound when they hit the ground. And that's how you get money from killing people. I should have more to say about this goddamn game. It's just a lot of fun. It's a really fun side-scrolling beat-em-up. But I guess the reason it's so far down my list, well, there are two reasons. One is it's a little difficult to figure out. It's really fun if you're just sitting down to play it for like 10 minutes or whatever. But if you're actually trying to beat the game, I remember there being a few parts where I just didn't know what to do or where to go, because there's no real indication of that most of the time. And sometimes there are like, you got to kill everybody on the screen to make something happen. And if you don't know that, which you don't because it doesn't tell you, you might just be completely confused as to why you can't progress in this game. And then the other reason is just that I knew nothing about this game until emulation came along. I do own it on a cartridge now, but I never did it as a kid. I'd never even heard of it as a kid. I don't remember ever seeing it on a shelf at like a rental place or at a store. I had no idea. So I feel like that kind of doesn't really count as a mark against it, but if I'm going to do my top five NES games, it sort of does. My number three is Ninja Gaiden, and I kind of count the whole series because there were three games, and they did have kind of improvements and updates to the system, like the engine of the game, but for the most part, they were pretty identical in the way that they played, and graphically, they were nearly identical. But those games were, again, a lot of fun. They're super hard. I have never beaten a Ninja Gaiden game without cheating. I played, I think the only Ninja Gaiden game I have beaten was the first one. And I got through most of the game without cheating. But when I got to the end of the game, I just couldn't. I couldn't beat it. And I kept dying at the last boss, I think, and having to restart. And it was just driving me crazy. So I cheated. But those games are a lot of fun. They kind of introduced the whole concept of cutscenes in games. I don't know for sure, there may have been games that had cutscenes before that, but that was definitely the first series of games I ever saw with cutscenes. The cutscenes were ridiculous, but being the first game with cutscenes, I can kind of forgive it. I like the art in the cutscenes and stuff, and I love ninjas, so there you go. And Ninja Gaiden has perhaps my favorite power-up in any game ever, which is these boomerang throwing stars. I don't know what they're actually called, but it's this giant orange throwing star that when you throw it, it comes back to you. And if you jump over it, it goes past you and then comes back to you again. And if you're talented enough with your jumps, you can just keep this throwing star flying across the screen forever, which is kind of cool. It's a neat power-up. And then I guess my number two game would be Contra. In some ways, I think maybe the Ninja Gaiden series are actually better games, but Contra, I just spent so much time with. I played so much of that game, and it's one of the few games that I have beaten multiple times by cheating. I always used the code for the 30 lives. There's no way in hell I personally would be able to beat that game without doing that. I'm not very good at video games, but it was one of the few games I've ever beaten like that, and it was the ultimate multiplayer game, in my opinion, on the NES. For whatever reason, it was a game that I almost only ever played with friends, and it was so much fun to play with friends. I beat that game with our friend Dave, who listens, and you've probably heard of him if you've been listening long enough. I've beaten that game with him so many times, and it was just the most fun, and it never got old. We would just, hey, what do you want to do? I don't know, you want to beat Contra again? Fuck yeah, let's do it. Awesome. And it took some cues from the Alien series of movies, which I really, really like. I really like Aliens, specifically Aliens, the second one. And so that just adds to it. It just gives it more points. And then my number one, which I feel kind of bad about. I almost feel like it's a cop-out. Like, I feel like this would be a lot of people's number one. But my number one is Super Mario Brothers 3. Because I have never gotten a feeling from another video game like I got from Super Mario Brothers 3. I mean, it legitimately kind of was, in a lot of ways, a revolution of games. I'd never seen a game that felt as polished as that game did at the time that it came out. But on top of that, there was just this magical feeling, like the feeling I used to get when I was a very young child around Christmas time. Like, it really did feel you know, when you see Christmas movies and TV shows where it's Christmas time and stuff, and there just is this sense that everything is magic. Like the snow is just beautiful, and everything's red and green, and there are jingle bells everywhere, and it just, everything felt good around that time of the year. That's kind of the same feeling I got around Super Mario Brothers 3. I remember when the movie The Wizard came out, and that was like the big reveal in the United States of Super Mario Brothers 3. And seeing that game at the end of that movie just completely blew my fucking mind. I was so excited. I couldn't wait to get my hands on this game. And I've never felt like that about another game before or since. I was excited about video games before that, but never on that level. And never since then have I been that excited for a video game. And it didn't let me down. I have been excited for other video games, but they rarely live up to my expectations. But that one completely did. And it did, it had so many things that I liked about it in terms of like the Mario series of games. Like the first game, kind of boring, to be honest. For its time, Super Mario Brothers 1 was an awesome game. It did a lot of things that other games just hadn't done before. Like just most games hadn't even just done the side-scrolling platformer thing before. But Super Mario Brothers 3 had the Karibo's shoe, that green boot thing, which only exists legitimately in one level in the whole game. I might be wrong about that, but if I am wrong, I'm pretty close to right. It had the Hammer Brothers suit, the Tanuki suit, all these things that just kind of disappeared from the game after that. But I loved it. When Super Mario Brothers 3 was big, I used to make up new Mario superpowers and stuff. I'd make up new enemies. I'd draw my own levels. It was the only game I did that with to that extent. So really, that was a huge game for me. So I guess onto my Super Nintendo list. And this one I had a little more trouble with, but I guess just go for it. My number 5 is Super Mario World. And Super Mario World was a really good game. It was another game I spent a lot of time with, and it had a similar feeling to how I felt about Super Mario Brothers 3, but that had more to do with the Super Nintendo than it did with Super Mario World. It was more that, like, suddenly I was seeing these 16-bit graphics and this scaling, you know, and Mode 7-ish kind of stuff, and all these colors, and now you can ride a dinosaur. But really, the ride a dinosaur part is the only thing there that actually had anything to do with the game itself. The rest was just more technology upgrade issues. But it was a really fun game. Riding the dinosaur was pretty cool. It was the first time I'd seen, like, you know, massive sprites and enemies and things, or massive for the time. And it was just a lot of fun. But it compared to other games that came out later, I didn't spend nearly as much time with Super Mario World, and it just doesn't hold the same place in my heart. My number 4 game would be Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, which I played the fuck out of. That was another game that, kind of like Contra, I did a lot of multiplayer playing, I would have friends over and we would just, hey, let's beat Turtles in Time. And it was a great game. I was so into Ninja Turtles as a kid too, so that adds to it. But, it was a side-scrolling beat-em-up, which is a genre I really like. I don't know. I am pretty bad at these video game review kind of situations. But basically, it was just a really, really cool game. And it had, it was a game that did things that I didn't really expect. Like, there was this sewer surfing part of the game where you fight these big yellow alien things coming out of the water. And if you weren't a really big Ninja Turtles fan, you might not have really thought much of it. It's just like, oh, they're weird monsters in the sewer. But those big yellow monsters were these critters from just an episode of the Ninja Turtles cartoon that I think was called The Case of the Killer Pizzas. I have it on VHS somewhere, where these like alien eggs from Dimension X somehow get confused for meatballs and put on a pizza and shoved in a microwave, and then they hatch and these big yellow alien things come out, and then they go to the sewers and the turtles have to take them out. But like, it's kind of an obscure thing for Ninja Turtles, and somehow it made it into the game. And that just that kind of stuff, when it happens, is just kind of exciting to me. It surprises me, because I wouldn't expect the people making the game to know what the fuck that was, because I wouldn't expect the people making a Ninja Turtles game in the Super Nintendo era to actually be anybody who gave a fuck about Ninja Turtles. But anyway, so that was really cool. My number 3 game is Final Fantasy 3/6, whichever one you want to call it. It was 3 at the time. That was, for the most part, the game that got me into RPGs. To a certain extent, it was actually Secret of Mana that got me into the RPGs, because that one was kind of like it was like a hybrid between an action game and an RPG. Like, I could go around and actually slash at enemies and stuff, and it allowed me to get past my sort of this sort of mental block I had around the idea of picking through menus to attack and having to deal with stats and stuff. I mean, you still had stats to deal with, but it was sort of a medium there. But Final Fantasy III was actually the first game that got me interested at all. Even before I played any RPGs, I would watch, again, our buddy Dave. He would come over and he would play Final Fantasy III, and I would just watch him play. And at the time, I was still pretty intimidated by the turn-based battle system and all the numbers everywhere and stuff. But whenever he wasn't fighting something, when he was just going around through towns and talking to people and, you know, just all the story elements, and I really liked that part. I hadn't seen anything like that in a game before, and it had kind of existed in games before. I just hadn't seen it. But that was, it got me really excited. I really enjoyed that story. I remember seeing the opera scene for the first time, and I'd never seen anything even remotely like that in a game. And I really liked the kind of aesthetic of the world, which is, I guess now you might call it like a steampunk thing, but I don't know if there was a term for that at the time. And if there was, I definitely didn't know what it was. But it was sort of this kind of anachronistic technology sort of thing. Like, everything's, you know, knights and kingdoms and castles and whatever, and there's magic. But then there's also this sort of high technology kind of thing, which is sort of a hybrid of magic and technology. And there's like, one of the characters has an automatic crossbow, which is kind of like a machine gun, but it's a crossbow. And I don't know. I just liked the juxtaposition there of like the high fantasy, you know, low tech medieval style stuff, and then all this high tech, you know, there's mechs and things. I don't know. It was the first time I'd seen anything like that. And then when I finally did play it, and I got to the, cause I think when I watched Dave play it, I didn't see the whole game, and I didn't know that, when I played it by myself, I got to this part where basically the world ends. And right before that, it feels like you're at the end of the game. It feels like you beat the game. And because I was playing it pretty much blind, I didn't read up on the game or anything before I played it, I didn't realize that that wasn't the end of the game. Then shit goes sideways, the world more or less ends, and now you have like the rest of the game, like that might be maybe halfway through the game, and you have the rest of the game to play in the post-apocalypse. And I had no idea that was even coming, which was really cool at the time. So I guess my number two game is another RPG. I didn't expect there to be so many RPGs on this list, but it kind of makes sense because the Super Nintendo era was really the only era that I was really into RPGs during. I don't know what it is exactly, but something about Super Nintendo RPGs just holds a special place in my heart. But anyway, so Chrono Trigger is my number two. And I actually didn't play that much on the actual console when it came out, but in emulation later. So I guess it should have lost some points because of that if I did that to River City Ransom, but whatever. This is my list. Leave me alone. Anyway, that game had, I mean, I guess as Super Nintendo RPG era video games go, it had an amazing story. It had this time travel element and all these characters that I really liked. And, oh God, my brain is just spazzing out. I told you I'm not very good at this video game reviewing thing. But it had awesome music. That was another thing that Final Fantasy VI had. Just really, really good music. And I felt like the whole thing just came together really well in Chrono Trigger. Like the art, the music, the story, I gave a shit about the characters. I really liked the characters, which I've tried to play like more recent Final Fantasy games and stuff. I just find it so difficult to give a shit about the characters. And I don't know why that is. You know, it might be something as superficial as like I liked the more cartoony art style that they used in the past just because they had to, because they were 16-bit games. And maybe the more realistic looking characters, for some reason, they just seem more generic to me. It could be as shallow as that. But for whatever reason, I really, really liked the characters and gave a shit about what was happening with them. And if there was a certain character I liked and I couldn't use them because of this one part of the game, the way it's structured, I would actually care. I'd be not just because, oh, that's the one that's the highest level, but because I like that character and I want to play with them. And now I can't. So I would care about getting them back and figuring out what's happening to them. And it had cool things like, you know, things early on in the game that you did that just seemed completely incidental would actually come back and have a part in the story later. I don't know. It was cool. Whatever. And then my number one was another RPG, Super Mario Brothers RPG, which I think some people would probably consider, I think a lot of people would agree with me, but I think some people would probably consider it to be sort of a baby game, because it kind of was like a my first RPG kind of game. It's pretty simple in all the, you know, RPG kind of aspects and things. But I think that's part of what I liked about it. I really don't like the micromanagement of that kind of stuff. Like some of the newer Final Fantasy games have all these fucking grid systems where you're putting magic marbles into slots, and like there's this whole map of crisscrossing bullshit that you have to go through. And because it's the idea is kind of cool in theory, because you can really customize your character. But Jesus Christ, I just want to play the fucking game. I don't want to like be scrolling through spreadsheets and shit, you know, just to keep my character where I want him to be. And Super Mario RPG was great for that, because you didn't really have to worry about that much. You really had three stats that you really had to worry about. You had your HP, your MP or FP, I guess they were flower points, and like your attack power. I mean, yeah, I guess your defense, you know, but there really wasn't that much you had to worry about in that way. And I liked the story again. I liked the characters. I liked the graphics. That came about at a time when it was kind of trendy to use pre-rendered 3D graphics in your games. But I think Super Mario RPG was the best example of that. I think that game looked fantastic. I think Donkey Kong Country did an okay job of that. And I think Donkey Kong Country was really the game that kind of got that ball rolling. But I think Super Mario RPG did an awesome job of that. And, I don't know, man. It was so colorful and cute. And again, I gave a shit about what was happening. Like, I liked the dialogue and stuff. It wasn't boring. And it had new characters that like have never appeared in another Mario universe game ever, but it didn't feel weird and wrong to me. And you get to team up with Bowser, which is awesome. You know, you get to team up with the bad guy. And, I don't know, man. Get off my balls. I liked the game. And it also, again, it had super, super good music. In fact, I think that might be, Super Mario RPG might contain, in my opinion, which of course is subjective, but in my opinion, might contain the best music heard on the Super Nintendo. So there is that. And now that I've gotten to the end of that list, it has occurred to me that I didn't know what I was going to talk about after that list. So let's go back to the Twitter. Devin, my buddy Devin, also says, find a random last minute guest. Also, it has been some time since the last daily piff. I'm not going to find a random last minute guest, so there. But I think that's pretty obvious by this point. I could probably have gotten John in here, but John had something else going on tonight too, and I wasn't sure if he was going to be here or not. And then when I woke up, you know, at like 1:30 in the morning, I kind of felt like, I don't know, I had already resigned myself to doing this alone, so now I'm doing it alone. I might have been able to talk him into it, I don't know. But the Daily Piff, I think I'm not going to do that today. And the main reason I'm not going to do that today is because I just don't think it works as well, by myself, because when I do one of the things that makes these solo shows, and I've only done a couple of them, but one of the things that makes these solo shows harder is that there's nobody here to like get a reaction from, you know, to gauge, am I heading down the right road here? If I say something I thought was funny, was it funny? I don't know, because there's nobody here to laugh. And I, so, you know, if I'm doing the Daily Piff, like, it'd just be really weird on my end to be doing this crazy voice and reading this crazy stuff and then laughing at myself and not knowing, you know, is this funny at all? And I think then I get self-conscious and blah, 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 blah. You don't need to hear all this. Basically, I'm not going to do it this week, but maybe next week when Orion's back. So now onto the Facebook. I said podcast night, Orion is busy, so Kyle's flying solo and he needs all the help he can get, which is pretty self-evident at this point. What's up, dogs? And then our buddy Dave, who I used to play all kinds of Contra with, says, thoughts on Occupy Wall Street? Oh boy, I've been intentionally not bringing up Occupy Wall Street for a while now because I don't have a lot of thoughts on it, because I have no idea what the fuck they're doing out there. I see these videos and pictures and articles and shit about Occupy Wall Street, and it just seems like a bunch of angry people hanging out, and they don't really seem to know why they're doing it. I'm sure there are people out there who have very concrete ideas about why they're out there in their own heads. But I've seen videos of people being interviewed. Like somebody will go out with a microphone and be like, hey, tell me about why you're here. And they don't know. They can't give you an answer to that. And even some of the stuff I have heard in terms of why they're out there, I'm not so sure I can get behind. Like I did pull something up here a minute ago. Like this OccupyWallst.org. I found this post where somebody said, here are five goals and demands the Occupy Wall Street movement need to immediately adopt and send to Washington, D.C. and Wall Street, which I think is kind of silly for right off the bat, because Occupy Wall Street is not it's just a bunch of people hanging out on Wall Street. It's not like there's no leader, you know, there's no committee for them to, you know, debate this stuff and then decide that as a group, we're going to send this. This is our manifesto that we're going to send to DC. There's nobody to do that. So I'm not even sure how you would do it. Like if somebody decided, you know what, I'm going to take it upon myself to do this. Well, then you're going to have all these other people going, well, who the fuck are you to decide that these are our demands? Because I'm sure a lot of these people disagree on things. But anyway, here's this list this one person put down. These are five demands that we as Occupy Wall Street need to send out to Washington, D.C. The first demand is the ending of all corporate welfare. Taxpayers should not be subsidizing for profit. Jesus Christ. There's no punctuation in this. The ending of all corporate welfare. Taxpayers should not be subsidizing for-profit companies, and governments should not be in the business of picking winners and losers with taxpayer money. I can kind of agree with that. I mean, the corporate welfare, I think, is maybe a little bit unfair, because as far as I know, there's no actual corporate welfare. You know, that's you being snarky in your wording. So what does that actually mean? But the idea that, like, if a business is having trouble, the government should not come and just give them money because, hey, you are too big to fail. I can agree with that. But then the next one is create a penalty tax for U.S. corporations that ship jobs outside North America. Americans should not lose their jobs so their CEOs can fatten their wallets even more. CEOs in this country are the highest paid in the world, making hundreds of times more than the average worker, more than any other country on earth. Executive compensation has grown to astronomical heights along with consumer goods, job layoffs and jobs going abroad. Actually, they wrote aboard, but they meant abroad. That one, I don't know, man. I have a hard time. One thing I've heard people say, I've heard a lot of people say this, and they attribute it as a quote to various people, and I think they're wrong. I don't know whoever actually first said it, and I'm going to be paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact wording, but one thing I've heard a lot of people say is that in America, the poor don't see themselves as poor. They see themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires, which is a nice little soundbite. It sounds very clever. And I get the idea behind it. What they're saying is that, like, the poor don't, they see themselves as the same as the guys on Wall Street or whatever. All these, you know, these super rich people, they think, you know what, someday that could be me. And that's how they think about things. So they see something like, you shouldn't be able to ship jobs outside of North America because it's not good for Americans. They'll be losing their jobs. And they're like, well, that's not fair. What if I had a company, I would want to, it's up to me. It's my company. If I want to ship jobs overseas, then so be it. It's my company. And then people see that and they think, oh, you're just being stupid. You're poor. Stop looking out for the interests of these fat cats and think about yourself for a minute. Well, okay, fine. But the truth is, I don't think there's anything wrong or irresponsible or stupid about trying to be fair like that. And these companies, they get so big that it gets kind of iffy, you know, on how fair we should really be to them. But in truth, if I had a company and I decided it would be in my best interest to hire overseas labor because it's so much fucking cheaper, then who are you to tell me I can't do it? You're not entitled to a job. That's another thing I've seen. It's not on this list, but one thing I saw as a demand of Occupy Wall Street is that people should be allowed, people should make a living wage regardless of whether they even have a job or not. They are entitled to a living wage, which sounds great. And you know what? I wish I didn't have to work and that the government would just pay me to live. That would be awesome. But it doesn't really make any sense. You're not entitled to a living wage. You're not even entitled to a job. You have to go out there and get a job. And you can't tell a person you need to employ me because I deserve a job. You can't do that. It's just not fair. Like, what if somebody came to you and said, you need to start paying me just to live because I deserve it, because I am alive. So I deserve to be paid and you need to do it. What? Why? I don't even know you. So I don't think that's fair. I think the people who see themselves as temporarily embarrassed millionaires, I think that's a really rude statement. And I think the people that they're referring to when they make that statement are right. I think that is the right way to look at it. Let's see. The next one is close the offshore corporate tax loopholes. American corporations should be paying American taxes and their full and fair share. Oh, that was really gross. American corporations should be paying American taxes in their full and fair share. Yeah, I agree that they should be paying American taxes in their full and fair share. I would have to know exactly what these offshore corporate tax loopholes were in order to determine if I thought that they really were loopholes. I guarantee you there are actual loopholes where people are just avoiding paying. It's tax evasion is what it is. I'm sure there are, but I bet there are some that I would not consider a loophole, that I would consider, you know, fair enough, that's the way that works, and people are still mad at them, because it seems to me that a lot of these people on Occupy Wall Street are just mad because there are rich people. You know, there are rich people, and I'm not one of them. I'm so angry. I should be rich. And I do get that impression from them, and I think that that's just kind of ridiculous. Give the shareholders of publicly traded corporations the power to vote on director/executive compensation, or at least how that is decided and by whom. The Netherlands already do this, and in Australia, shareholders have an advisory role in deciding executive compensation, and neither has the level of corporate corruption that the U.S. has. Shareholders, I don't really understand how that works exactly, how being a shareholder, you know, owning stock in a company, I don't really know how that works. For one thing, none of it makes sense to me. The idea of owning a tiny portion of a company just doesn't make sense. It really sounds like just made up bullshit for a company to make money, you know, to say, hey, you can buy a little tiny portion of our company. And then if enough people do it, hey, look at all this fucking money we're making for no reason. You know, you're not buying anything really. It just seems like, yeah, just made up nonsense. But the shareholders, I don't know. Like, to me, that seems like something that you would have to agree upon on a corporation by corporation basis. Like, if my corporation, I have no idea how this actually works, but if I had a corporation, if I had a company and we were going to sell shares of it, there would have to be an agreement there as to what that actually means, what kind of influence you are going to have on the company by owning this little portion of it. It doesn't seem like something that should be like federally mandated, like, hey, if you bought so much of this company, you have a right to this and this and this in terms of how that company is run. That seems like something that should be agreed upon when you're buying it. I don't know. That's me. Prohibit the same person from being chairman of the board and chief executive officer at the same time of publicly traded corporations. Having the chairman and CEO be the same person at a company puts too much power in the hands of one individual and is a conflict of interest. It also creates a dangerous lack of oversight. In Canada, Australia, and New Zealand, nearly all corporations have a different person in each position. These countries do not have the level of corporate corruption that the United States have. The board of directors is supposed to supervise and evaluate the CEO and is responsible for general oversight of the corporation. They cannot do that objectively and impartially when the CEO is also the chairman of the board. That just all sounds like goofy nonsense to me. It sounds like the same thing I was just saying about the shareholders thing. Like this, it's a company, and they're going to be run differently from one to the next. You know, some companies are going to have a CEO and a chairman of the board that are different people, and some people are going to have them be the same people. It seems like another weird thing to put into law that you can't have both of these positions. I don't know. I don't care. And I think a lot of these people just really like the idea of getting together and being angry in a very vague way and literally beating drums, having drum circles. And they just seem like a bunch of weird, misguided hippies who are upset and they're kind of like the douchiest form of liberal who really wants to just demonstrate. They just like the idea of demonstrating and protesting. But I can't see this leading anywhere because nobody knows what they want. Even if collectively everyone there had an idea, the same idea of what it is they were trying to accomplish, nobody knows what it is. I was reading this poll somebody polled Americans asking them about their approval of the Occupy Wall Street movement and whether they approved or not. And more people approved than disapproved, but the vast majority of people didn't, they couldn't comment because they didn't know what the fuck it was about. And I don't really either. And I think that message isn't getting out there, even if it exists. And so this isn't going to lead anywhere. The only thing that's going to happen is people are going to keep getting maced and beaten. And from what I've heard, like, people keep talking about police brutality and stuff. But from what I've heard, the only cases where I've heard anything specific, it really was the protesters just being dicks and inciting shit. So I don't know. It doesn't matter to me. It seems like a waste of time and a bunch of people being dummies. But, you know, maybe there's some aspect of it that I don't know that would change my mind. So if you know more about it, you have something to say about it, then by all means, get back to me. And then our buddy Dave links to this thing, an article and a video. It says, "What the fuck? Louisiana bans cash for secondhand transactions. And I was reading the article, but there's also a video. So I guess I'll try to play the video because that's better for the show.
This one. Cold, hard cash. It's good everywhere you go, right? You can use it for anything, to pay for anything. But that's not the case here in Louisiana now. It's a law that was passed during this year's busy legislative session. KLFY TV 10 Eyewitness News reporter Doug McDermott joins us live in the newsroom with how a bill like this could have flown so far under the radar. Doug.
Well, Darla, basically House Bill 195 says those who buy and sell secondhand goods cannot use cash in those transactions. And it flew so far under the radar that most businesses don't even know about it.
We're going to lose a lot of business. We don't want this cash transaction to be taken away from us. I mean, it's an everyday transaction.
Danny Guidry owns the Pioneer Trading Post in Lafayette. He deals in buying and selling unique secondhand items.
I'm pausing this for a second because there's got to be more to this, right? It can't literally just be you cannot use cash in the purchase, in the buying and selling of secondhand goods. Like, that sounds absolutely insane. Like, the very first thing that came to my mind, which maybe says something about me, is GameStop. GameStop does a lot of their business in used games. So does that mean you can't buy a game at a GameStop in Louisiana for cash? That's fucking crazy. That's absolutely insane. And what is that? What do you have to buy it with then? Credit? Like, what's the fucking difference? They're both just money, right? I don't know. And pawn shops, like, anybody who deals in, what about garage sales? Are they in trouble now? I don't know. This is fucking crazy.
I think everyone in this business, once they find out about it, they're going to definitely be, there's going to be a lot of uproar.
The law states those who buy or sell secondhand goods are prohibited from using cash. State Representative Ricky Hardy co-authored the bill.
They give a check or a cashier's money order or a electronic. One of those three mechanisms is used.
Hardy says the bill is targeted at criminals who steal anything from copper to televisions and sell them for a quick buck. Having a paper trail will make it easier for law enforcement.
It's a mechanism to be used so the police department could be able to have something to go on and have a lead.
Guidry feels his store should not have to change its ways of doing business because he may possibly buy or sell stolen goods, something he says has happened only once in his 8 years.
We are being targeted for something that we shouldn't be.
Besides nonprofit resellers like Goodwill, along with garage sales, the language of the bill encompasses stores like the Pioneer Trading Post and flea markets. Lawyer Thad Ackle Jr. feels the passage of this bill begins a slippery slope for economic freedom in the state.
The government is placing a significant restriction on individuals transacting in their own private property.
Pawn shops have been forced to keep records of their clients for years, but in this new law, they're still able to deal in cash. Live in the newsroom for KLFY TV 10 Eyewitness News, I'm Doug McDermott.
Thanks, Doug. Well, it was another warm.
Yeah, okay, whatever. So yeah, that's completely insane. And I don't really understand why a pawn shop is okay to deal in cash. Like, that they are still dealing in secondhand goods. I'm not sure. There must be a line in there somewhere that's like, you guys already keep track of this shit, so you're okay. It must specifically state that pawn shops are okay, because otherwise they do fall under that law. But that's absolutely insane. It's just, there's no way it's going to be worth it overall to catch, you know, a handful of criminals dealing in stolen goods, or just prevent them from doing it at all, while simultaneously inconveniencing so many people. Hey, you have to use a check or a cashier's check or a money order. Just what a fucking pain in the ass. Because now you're saying if you want to deal in secondhand goods, you essentially, you don't have to, but you essentially have to have a bank account, which most people probably do, but you shouldn't be, it shouldn't be like this thing that you have to do. You know, I don't know. It's just fucking insane. And I find it a little odd. I think they did this on purpose to make it a real human interest story, but I find it a little odd that they dealt pretty much specifically with these crazy like antique stores and secondhand like thrift shops and stuff instead of going and saying something like what I was saying about GameStop. Like I think if you mentioned GameStop, it puts it in a different light, for me at least, and makes it seem really crazy. Like, it doesn't seem to me like you're regulating these shady shops where people are dealing potentially in stolen goods, where people go to sell shit that they stole out of a person's house. If you mention GameStop, it's like saying you can't pay cash at Walmart anymore. You know, like it puts it on a different level that makes it sound really crazy to me. Like, it just sounds way too intrusive. But I mean, that's really, you know, all I've got to say about that. It's just crazy. And I guess I have some like libertarian leanings. I really think the government should stay out of a lot more than they do. I think they get their little fingers in so many things that just aren't their business. And I guess this is, but I think this is a particularly insane example. I think like, I can't imagine many people agreeing that this is a good idea, that this, yes, we need to do this because there's such a rampant problem with people stealing things and selling them to thrift stores that are primarily stocked with like old stupid looking lamps that nobody wants and like taxidermied animals and shit. I don't know, man. It's just crazy is what it is. So next thing on the Facebook, Jeff Mazarek, the wizard, said, I hoped this song was in the film Watermelon Man. And then he links to a YouTube video of a song, which I think I'm going to actually use as the intro music. So I won't play it right here, but you should have heard it at the beginning of the show. And that song was not in the movie Watermelon Man. At least I don't think so. But the song is called Watermelon Man. So that's why. Oh, God, my throat is being crazy today. He says, also an old, well-known bit of horse violence. And then he, hold on. Yeah, I think there was supposed to be another link or maybe a picture or something, but nothing showed up as an old, well-known bit of horse violence. So I'm not sure what that was. Then he says, I don't know if those posted quite right. Great show last week, by the way. I pictured the horses being dipped in lava and a group of scientists never making it past the question, are you feeling well today? Yeah. How are you feeling? Are you feeling well today? Ow, 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 no, ow, dead horse. And that's it on the Facebook and the Twitter. And, you know, I'm sure I could come up with more things to talk about. But to be honest, you're probably like just listening out of pity at this point. And the show has gone on pretty long considering I'm doing it all by myself. So I think I'm going to end it there. As usual, you can email me at Kyle@IJustHadATerribleThought.com. And if you want to email Orion, that's Orion@IJustHadATerribleThought.com. You can leave us a voicemail at 616-328-5581, which is my personal favorite. Please do that. There's the Facebook and the Twitter, Facebook.com/IJHat and Twitter.com/IJHat. Those are good places to see what's going on, see when the episodes are released, good places to contact us if you want to say something to us, but you don't think it's important enough or standalone enough to put in an email. And that's where I always ask for topic suggestions and questions and things. So if you want to get in on that, that's the place to be. There's the forum. IJustHadATerribleThought.com/forum. Good place to discuss the old episodes. And there are all kinds of other threads and sub forums for you to post whatever the fuck you want. There's a forum for everything. And you can donate. It's my birthday month, so send me monies, please. I really enjoy that. That's it. That's it. So, as usual, guys, thanks for listening, and we will check you next week, dog.
What happened is this kid was playing against some guy. What's up?
Actually, I am going to duck out now.
Okay. Goodbye, Ryan.
Have a good night, Ryan.
Get fucked. Oh.
What?
Yeah. So, this guy was playing Black Ops.